This is Jerry Vane, podcasting from the Coalition for Networked Information Fall 2012 meeting, and I'm joined here in conversation with Anita DeWard, Disruptive Technologies Director and soon-to-be Vice President of Research Data Collaborations for Elsevier Labs. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So, starting out, what do you think is one of the most disruptive technologies to come around in the last few years?
Obviously, the greatest change that has happened around the world is that anyone can share any piece of content at any time. And that's revolutionized, obviously, many things, including revolutions. And I think what's really surprising in science, in a way, is how little has changed over this time. Mm-hmm. People do still do research much in the same way they did 20 years ago. However, I think it must be said that currently what I think is the biggest change is that social media have finally really come to science. I think at this point what becomes clear, and some efforts in the past couple of years have shown this, that scientists can reach each other by using the apps and the tools that they use in their other social communications just as well as they can in using formal publications. So I'm not talking about the business models of open access versus closed access publishers. It's all papers are a form of communication. That used to be pretty much the only way to communicate your science, together, of course, with conferences. But I think right now, really, blogs and tweets and informal communications have become very strong, so strong that you can have communities of scientists who go in certain directions, for instance, who start to develop things independent of all these formal channels. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as a technology, it's been there for a while.
Right. What you're saying is the platform to allow collaboration
Yes.
has developed to the point where scientists can actually work together.
Right.
In real time.
I think both platform and people's habits mm-hmm. have changed, even though I think there could be more change, but we'll get to that.
Sure. Well, how are these disruptive technologies and these collaborations changing the way we approach research?
To a certain degree, they are. To a certain degree, I wish they would be more so. And actually, that's what my new job is about. Mm-hmm. I think the degree that they are is that there are many more informal collaborations. I think in some ways it's affecting, as it is in other parts of life, it's affecting the hierarchies, the social contracts that there are, and life sciences more so, and medicine probably even more so, has been somewhat hierarchical. Perhaps that's less the case in areas like math or physics even, where if you were brilliant, you could come out of nowhere, be 22, and you'd be, you know, the world expert on something.
Right.
But in areas that have more to do with craft, so in medicine, there's a whole tradition of becoming a doctor, and law, of course, as well. The humanities, perhaps also, because it simply takes a lot of time to learn the things that must be learned in a humanities career. So there was a certain hierarchy, of course. And especially, I think that meant that the people higher up in the hierarchy could travel and therefore could communicate more. Mm-hmm. That's shifted because the younger students probably have a better grasp on the social media. And so they're communicating. They're getting
right.
together.
Well, speaking of people getting together, let's talk about Force 11 a little bit. What is Force 11, and what are some of the activities you guys
Yes, yes.
participate?
So in Force 11, this is very much what we'd like to help accelerate, I suppose. So Force 11 came out of a bunch of conversations that I was having with a number of people, Ed Hovey, David Shotton, Tim Clark. There were different people talking about, wouldn't it be interesting to get together with a bunch of people coming from different fields? And in particular, we were looking at computational linguistics, semantic web technologies, and areas like publishing and the libraries. David Rosenthal was another person. And I had met some of them planning we did something called the Elsevier Grant Challenge, where we did an open invitation for people to develop ways to publish life sciences better. And the judging panel was a really interesting bunch of people. We all realized at the challenge that getting the judges together and also getting the people together who were interested in making new things happen in science publishing was a great thing. And there were a lot of things that these people had to say to each other. And there were a lot of ways in which their skill sets were very complementary and the communities that they came from were very different. And getting them together might help accelerate the rate of change in science publishing, which needs to be accelerated.
Sure.
because, like I said before, there is still, at the foundation of science, there are still ways of doing science that, you know, that could be done much better. So Force 11 grew out of this idea that there might be a community who would be interested to talk about scientific communication. And the acronym is the Future of Research, Communication, and E-Scholarship. And it was 2011 that we started it. So we had this idea for a meeting, and then Phil Bourne had this meeting called Beyond the PDF in January of 2011. And then all of us who were thinking of having this meeting, we decided to go for a Denkstuhl workshop. It's a workshop that they have in Germany, and it allows you to sit together for more or less a week with a group of people and really mull over an issue. And so Phil Bourne then became involved in the organization as well, and Ed Hovey and Tim Clark and Paul Gross became involved, and David Schotten and Ivan Herman of the W3C. Mm-hmm. So we all put together this workshop with the goal of let's sit together, let's get people from publishing. There were only a few, unfortunately. Many couldn't make it because there was another meeting going on. From libraries, again, there were only a few. Individual scientists who have been really changing the way that science is published. David Schotten and Tim Clark are both excellent examples of that. And people coming from fields where dealing with knowledge is really their topic of study. Mm-hmm. And computational linguistics and the semantic web are both examples of the latter. Mm-hmm. So all of these groups to come together and to say, what are really the issues that we need to tackle if we want to move to the next, if we want to accelerate the rate of change in science publishing, in scholarly publishing? And then we came up with this manifesto, which has 6 bullet points. And the 6 are in 2 different clusters. One is the cluster of changing the unit of publishing, essentially. So it is, what's the unit of publishing? Is it an article? Is it something smaller than an article? The concept of nanopublications and micropublications now coming up, which are smaller units that you could publish. It's tools to do that, so tools that work in your browser, or tools that work in your laptop, tools to keep track of all your publications, authoring tools, all that stuff. And it's also integrating research data. That was the third part of that. So those are 3 big topics where we think change is happening, but it would be good to cluster some activities around where the change is happening, and especially enable communication between people working on these topics. And the second big chunk is changing business models and models of attribution. And that's essentially new roles for publishers, new roles for libraries, and new metrics, so new ways to measure the output. How good is what you did? So how do you do that in a world where, you know, you're a very influential blogger, or you wrote a piece of software that everybody's using, or you've given a lecture that has been downloaded 50,000 times because it's so brilliant, or you gave this brilliant TED Talk which inspired countless numbers of people? None of that currently is measured in the realm of academia, because they only look at your papers and then they only look at your citations. So how do you develop metrics to measure that whole thing? Publishers, it's obvious. The open access discussion is, I think, now, and that's one of the things in Force 11. We want to have those discussions be open and equal. We want it to be not, you know, one group ensconced in their fortress, you know, throwing missives over the wall. Right. Your mother is a hamster and your father smells of elderberry. You know, not that. We want, in the plane, we want an open dialogue. And then we want, you know, an honest work there. And we do think, I mean, I still work for Elsevier. I think there's a role for publishers in scientific communication, or I wouldn't be working there. But I do also think that the whole discussion needs to be much more open. And so that's the other goal of Force 11, to have these discussions openly.
Are you guys on the web at all?
Yes. So force11.org, you can become a member. The goal was to have the website be a place where you could show and link to the work that you've done, and to enable connections to be made. One of the things we'd like to start, and we haven't really gotten it off the ground, but is to have a project broker, where you say, for instance, I've got this cool tool, does anybody have an application? Or somebody says, I have a need, I'm working in this community, we need X. Does anybody have a tool that will work for that? So we want to enable communication across these disciplinary boundaries. Mm-hmm. We'd really like to also open up scientific communication as a field where app developers and other people, creative people, you know, would be interested in contributing to.
Well, Anita, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thanks so much. All right.